Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is Alan Sliwa, host of the Lakers pre- and post-game, Lakers Talk and the Sliwa Show. I'm here with Brad Wallace, one of the top personal injury trial lawyers in the game. Brad, tell our listeners why they need to call the Wallace Firm when they get hurt.
Alan, I'll put my courtroom record up against any other lawyer on the radio. We focus on getting our clients top results. You won't see my face on billboards and won't hear me play an annoying jingle. If you get injured, you need a real trial lawyer, not a marketing guy.
Call the Wallace Firm now, 844-844-WINS, or visit WallaceWins.com today.
Appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go till 9 o'clock. Always great to talk some Los Angeles Lakers basketball, and we'll do a little bit of everything tonight. So we'll definitely talk. I got a kind of a lot of ties with The Last Dance, and you know, looking at guys like Phil Jackson and him eventually becoming a coach of the Los Angeles Lakers and winning 5 NBA championships. So The Last Dance, as best as I can, I'll always try and tie in some stuff that we're watching. Yesterday is a great example. We got to see the Lakers and the Bulls, that series, and that was Michael Jordan's first NBA championship, Phil's first championship as a coach, Scottie's first championship, Dennis Rodman, go down the list. But one of the things that kind of stand out to me was reflecting back on that too. I brought the show with this, be a part of the show around in the 7 o'clock hour. Bobby Marks, front office insider for ESPN, he'll come on in the 8 o'clock hour. This is how I want to start the show. So I don't know if you guys got a chance to see Adrian Wojnarowski put out a couple different tweets. NBA to allow players to re-enter team facilities for voluntary workouts by May 8th. Originally it was going to be May 1st. Now it's going to be May 8th. We got a little bit of details of what that means. So I want to put out how this could have its potential local effect on the Los Angeles Lakers and really just kind of, you know, certain teams that have to go by different set of rules in different states. I mean, that's really the position that we're all in right now when we're looking at sports and we're looking at, you know, some businesses are opening. There's certain states out there that let's put it this way. They have a different set of rules than what California is going to do or what New York is going to do. They're softening. That's the word I was looking for. They're softening some of their restrictions right now. So these are the rules right now around the NBA and these team facilities potentially opening up these voluntary workouts by May 8th. So the rules associated with the facilities opening: only 4 players in a facility at one time, 1 staff member supervising. No coaches are allowed in the workouts, and a distance of 12 feet must be kept among individuals. So let me just kind of paint the picture here real quick. Most of these courts, I'll use the Lakers practice facility as an example. It's not like there's just 1 court and 2 hoops, right? It's humongous. So right off the top of my head, I could already think of, you know, 4 different hoops that are there. And that's how most of these facilities are. You want to get as many players the ability to practice and so forth. So when they say 4 players in a facility at one time, I'm assuming what they're saying is 1 person is practicing on each hoop. Can't have any coaches. There's no structure here. You're just kind of working on your shot, maybe working on your endurance, things along those lines, just to kind of get into some kind of a groove. This is the question that I have. The question that I have, and this is something that Jared Dudley had proposed on Twitter as well. The question I have is, okay, well, if there's certain states that are opening up quicker than others, certain states that are looser with their restrictions than California and New York, I'll just use those two as an example because those are not just these massive states, but they're also two states that definitely go by a different set of rules than some of the other states across the country. And they are more conservative and rightfully so. You know, New York was what they battled and what they're still battling is unbelievable, the impact that's had on COVID-19. And that might be different than another state in this country. But the fact that some facilities would be able to be open by May 8th and some wouldn't, explain to me how that one is fair. I have a lot of trust, a lot of trust in the NBA and a lot of trust in Adam Silver. And I have a lot of trust that they're going to make, you know, the right decision in a lot of these circumstances that have been built out. And the last thing that you want to do is give a team 30 extra days or give individuals on that team 30 extra days to get shots up or 30 extra days to just get their conditioning back. I know players can do things. If you guys watched Horse, right? So you had Mike Conley had a hoop at home. So it's different maybe for Mike Conley. He's got a full out, you know, indoor basketball gym as if you're going to 24-hour fitness. Not every player is like that. And I know that might sound crazy to you to think like, what do you mean an NBA basketball player doesn't have a basketball court at his house? Well, that's actually very common. A lot of these players, they rely on the facility. And the facility, it's not like if a player on the Lakers wants to go use a Lakers training facility, this was before COVID-19, I'm pretty sure they're not going to be restricted of using it. That's like you going to the office wanting to go work more. Sure, sounds good. Here's the keys. Go in there and have at it. But everything changed once these, you know, once COVID-19 hit and all these restrictions started coming down. I mean, if I wanted to right now go to the office, I'm not allowed to. I can't. So there's a lot of people that are under these circumstances where you can't physically walk into your office. For Laker players or Clipper players, or I'll say Brooklyn Net players, and I say Brooklyn Nets because they're a team in New York. You know, this is kind of it's going to take a long time for things to start opening up again, and they're in the playoff picture as well. They're a seventh seed in the Eastern Conference, seventh or eighth, something along those lines. I think them and Orlando are both flip flopping of who's going to be eliminated in the first round. But if you look at New York, you look at California and you look at these three teams that I mentioned, the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Brooklyn Nets as an example. If it's going to take longer for these states to ease some of these restrictions and to slowly open up more, you cannot have a playoff team in another state have the ability to go through these, you know, get voluntary workouts in, but some Laker or Clipper players don't have that ability. Not everyone's going to have a home like LeBron James. Not everybody is going to have, you know, these certain setups at home because they've never needed to. This is an awful example, but it's the best example that I could give just relating it to work right now. I don't have a radio studio at home. Now, we're working with what we got in order for all of us to be able to go local. It's not ideal, but it's kind of the predicament, the situation that we're in. So we're making the best of it. A lot of these players, they don't have that ability right now to be doing what they'd be doing during the season. So to have another team have access to a facility or something along those lines, that can't fly. Like that can't be okay for the NBA to say to themselves, because I think right now they're going to start it off like a third of the practice facilities will be open by May 8th. This is a date that they're targeting. I know nothing's concrete. It was originally May 1st. Now it's May 8th. So you can tell this is a moving target. All I'm saying is this. If the Memphis Grizzlies have access to go use their practice facility, or if the Houston Rockets have access, or the Dallas Mavericks have access to go use their practice facility, then the Los Angeles Lakers and the Los Angeles Clippers and the Brooklyn Nets and some of these other teams that are in different states, the Portland Trailblazers, I'm just using teams that I'm just thinking off the top of my head, right, that maybe have more tighter restrictions. They have to also be on the same exact time frame as every other team that's either in the NBA playoffs, fighting for a playoff spot, already secured a playoff spot. It can't be, well, we'll just let some teams get it and some teams not have that ability. Because this is a state thing, you know, the Lakers don't have control over this. They're going to obviously take every precaution possible, but they're also going to listen to health officials locally. Well, if health officials locally and in the state have different guidelines than another state, that puts another team at an advantage. That just doesn't sound like, first of all, that doesn't sound like the NBA. That doesn't sound like Adam Silver. That sounds, what would make more sense is Adam Silver and the NBA comes up with a solution all at the same time for everybody. You cannot have certain teams have an advantage, competitive advantage over another. You can give me your thoughts on this, by the way. Am I crazy to think that? I mean, it sounds very reasonable to me. It sounds kind of common sense to me, but I don't think that's the case right now. Now, I will say the league is trying to figure out some type of a solution where even players in this state or somewhere else has a place to practice. We'll see what happens. Phone number is 877-710-ESPN. Obviously, that'd have an effect on the Lakers. I want to also switch gears when we come back. The Last Dance. Lakers versus the Bulls in the finals. Phil Jackson, how great he was. We'll do that coming up next. And if you want to be a part of the show, it's 877-710-ESPN. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is Lakers Talk on 710-ESPN. So all I'm looking for is this. Obviously, I'm looking out for the Los Angeles Lakers here. The last thing I just want is teams to get a head start on others. You know, and I know that maybe that sounds small. It doesn't sound like a big deal that you know, players will get to work, get some shots in, or at least get their breath. I guess the best way I could put it, get their endurance back. But damn, I mean, you just stopped the season point blank. 6 weeks now, I think the NBA hasn't been playing, right around 6 weeks. And this would be, what, week two of the NBA playoffs. I think it's a humongous deal. If you're going to have just a portion of teams have access to a training facility and then another portion that doesn't, that's not okay. You know, this isn't – the Lakers don't have the Golden State Warriors record. The Lakers don't have the Phoenix Suns record or the – you know, they're not a team that's – has no shot here. They got a legitimate chance to win the NBA Finals this year, to hoist a championship, to tie the Boston Celtics. Every single advantage is very, very important, very, very necessary. Adrian Wojnarowski, who spends all his time, I think, breaking things down, was on SportsCenter a little bit earlier. Here's Woj on the NBA releasing a statement on facilities potentially opening.
You know, essentially, the state of Georgia opening for business on a limited basis first, I think had a lot to do with this timeline. And the Atlanta Hawks could open as soon as Friday when this rule will go into effect. Teams, Hannah, are really still waiting on the NBA to deliver them more details and specifics about how exactly this would work. You know, there was some communication from the league to a small group of owners over the weekend, and then we reported on that. But teams are still waiting for more detail about how this rollout would work. But, you know, a part of it was the league had concerns that if the state of Georgia opened up first and gymnasiums in that state were open, that you might see a migration of NBA players down to non-NBA facilities, which wouldn't have all the protocols in place and safety. And that was a concern of the league, that players could start entering 24-hour fitness centers, Equinox, those kinds of places.
By the way, I get that part. If some places start opening, man, that's going to take a while, too. Just thinking about gyms, just thinking about movie theaters, thinking about all that. We haven't even really got a chance to wrap our head around that. Is what are those all going to look like by the time things do open back up? I mean, think about these gyms. These gyms just crank people in there. I've mentioned a couple times, I'll go to the Los Angeles Athletic Club, and if I want to go play pickup basketball, you go on a Monday or a Wednesday at lunch, there's 20 people in there. You know, there's games running, and there's no such thing as social distancing. There's everybody on the elliptical. Like that part's going to be interesting. So I think the NBA thinking that the facilities are going to be a safer environment for them, I don't disagree with that at all. I just want to make sure all the teams got it's a fair game, that not one team gets to shoot around in practice and another team doesn't. Okay, let's take a couple phone calls here. 877-710-ESPN. Manuel from Gardena. Manuel, appreciate you calling in, bud. How are you?
Sleet Stack, man. I hope you had an awesome weekend, my man.
Thank you, man. You yourself? Too. Everything is good. No complaints. What do you think? By the way, I'm bringing up this topic. Do you agree with me that if they're going to – if anything's going to happen and you're going to allow teams to come, you know, in a much different measure of letting some of these teams and players come back to facilities – it's got to be for everybody, right? Like, you can't have one team have that access and another team not.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm thinking that Las Vegas is the most viable option. You're already familiar with the gyms. You have the hotel accommodation. I mean, I think the biggest thing that's weird to me is that, like, all right, if you get the whole pool of the NBA or the MLB, whatever league you have, everybody tests clean. The staffing test clean. You're disinfecting everything every day, checking temperatures. How does it become a problem for that stuff to spread? That's where I don't really get it. I know it's going to take a long time, but I would think like in a month's time you can do that as people are training. But yes, I think it has to be a centralized location. Sleestack, keep up the great work, man. I'm loving it. Love having you on from 6:30 to 9 daily, baby.
Appreciate it. Hey, Manuel, appreciate it, man. Thank you for calling in. 877-710-ESPN if you guys want to be a part of the show. You know, it's every time we've kind of talked about, well, how the NBA is going to come back, I've kind of stopped on that front. I've just kind of let that one go for now and allowed for this to be something that just plays itself out. We did that a lot in the beginning. In the beginning, I was trying to get Brian Windhorst as much as possible, trying to get grab sound from Adrian Wojnarowski. Okay, what's this game plan? What's that game plan? I feel like Adam Silver has kind of put a halt to that for now, saying we need more information before we're talking about a season coming back. Okay, so we'll kind of stay on that front. I'm going to have Bobby Marks on a little bit later in the show, and I think he'll be able to give some details, too, of how the facility will work, because it's important from a Laker perspective that if other teams are getting an opportunity to work on their game, that also the Lakers are in that position, because the state of California is going to be completely different than what another state is doing. Texas is going to be different than New York. New York's going to be different. I mean, everybody's going to have kind of their different guidelines. All right, coming up next, the man, the myth, the legend, Michael Thompson, joining Lakers Talk. I gotta get MT's thoughts on The Last Dance. So specifically, too, I want to ask him about Dennis Rodman. I want to ask him about Phil Jackson. There's a lot of great questions, I think, on that documentary brings out. So we'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. You're listening to Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Lakers Talk. We got Michael Thompson. How are we going to come off this Last Dance documentary and not get MT, Michael Thompson's thoughts? MT, how are you doing?
Doing good, you know, just feeling for everybody out there hurting. Just, I'm doing fine, my family's doing fine, but it's hard to enjoy yourself when you see so many people around the world, you know, hurting, not having a job, not, you know, just a tough time for the whole world.
No, it's crazy. And I know, Michael, you pay a lot of attention to not just what's going on from a sports perspective. I know you definitely enjoy keeping up with politics, keeping up with everything else going on around the world. How crazy is this? 25 million people file for unemployment in a five-week span. How crazy is that?
Yeah. Nobody could see this coming. Nobody expected this. And you can't. There's nobody to blame. Obviously, whoever's let that virus out to blame. But as far as in America, there's no government official, Democrat or Republican, you can blame for this, because nobody saw this coming.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate circumstance, but who knows, MT? I know there's some areas of the country where, you know, that curve is, it looks like it's starting to peak, and then maybe it just even starts kind of working its way downward a little bit. Hopefully that's the trend. You know, hopefully that this is exactly what happens over the next 30 days or so, and then maybe, just maybe, as we get into summer, maybe we start getting back to a little bit more of, you know, that routine that we're accustomed to, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, exactly. That's all we can do is just wait and wait it out. And when the government gives us the go-ahead to get back to work, everybody's got to jump in with both feet running.
Okay, so let's do this. Yesterday, and I appreciate you doing this, and I always, you know, it's interesting because when I'm watching The Last Dance and I'm seeing this, you know, episode yesterday was 3 and 4. We still got 6 more episodes to go over the next 3 Sundays. I'm curious to get your opinion on some of these things because it's such a unique perspective for you. I can watch as a fan, but you lived it, right? So you got a chance to not only be a part of it, literally be in the games and kind of see this era of basketball as it was unfolding in the 80s and the 90s, but then also you can take a step back and look at it from a fan perspective because, you know, you're also such a fan of the game as well. What did you think yesterday? I'll have specific questions, but just in general, episodes 3 and 4, what'd you think of yesterday's 2 episodes compared to the, you know, the first 2 episodes to start off the series?
Well, it's living up to the hype. It's getting better every week. The episodes keep building. So the sort of the climax at the end, and we expect episodes 5 and 6 to be even better than 3 and 4 because, you know, they're probably saving the best to the last few episodes.
Okay, so tell me this. Let's start. Yesterday's episode starts off with a lot of Dennis Rodman, right? There's kind of telling his story, following him from his childhood to then eventually playing college basketball, and then, you know, obviously his time with the Detroit Pistons. Before he even kind of progressed to being Dennis Rodman, because he was a different Dennis Rodman, it seemed like, in Detroit than by the time he got to the Spurs, by the time he got to the Bulls, and then eventually the Los Angeles Lakers. What do you remember from Dennis Rodman, the Pistons days?
He was completely different. He was just a regular guy, very energetic, hardworking, very tough competitor. But personality-wise, he was just a run-of-the-mill guy who just really quiet and blended into the background and didn't really, you know, draw any attention or seek any attention for himself. That all changed when he went to the Spurs and Madonna got a hold of him and taught him about how to promote himself and how to be outrageous and get more publicity that way. So when he was with the Pistons, he was just a regular, you know, average, you know, regular guy you would see out in the street and you ran into him. But he changed. All that changed. His image changed when he got to the Spurs and when he got around Madonna. She taught him how to be just a real outrageous and charismatic character.
MT, just looking back in those days, Dennis Rodman, the basketball player. So with the Pistons, when he's on the floor, I love the part where he was saying that, you know, he'd spend a lot of time in the gym and he'd have his friends just shoot. And he would just kind of look at, okay, the ball hits this part of the rim, this is the best chance of where it's going to bounce off of. And he became, you know, it's so interesting in basketball because maybe you could relate to this because, you know, you were a great rebounder. You did a lot of dirty work for a franchise and for a team that had, you know, these big time stars. Everybody kind of had a role. His role with the Pistons, how unique was that where, you know, you had one guy, I think I saw a stat yesterday that he had 20 rebounds and 0 points 7 times in his career. How unique is that type of a player to have on your team? And obviously he filled a role for the Pistons in those 2 championships that were very, very important.
Yeah, that's very unique. Dennis had no offensive skills, so he knew what he worked would work best for him was defense, hustle, and rebounding. He wasn't the kind of guy like an Otis Thorpe or Karl Malone or Sean Kemp, power forwards of that day. You can say, okay, get me 15 to 20 points a game. That wasn't his game. His game, he didn't have that kind of scoring touch or scoring skills. And he knew he wasn't going to survive in the NBA expecting to be a scorer. He knew his bread and butter, his peanut butter and jelly was rebounding, defense, and hustle. And so he played to that strength, and that's why he's able to get all those rebounds without even having to worry about scoring. And that's worked to his advantage because if you don't have to expend any energy on having to score, which takes a lot of energy, especially back in his day, then you can save all your energy for the 2 other aspects of the game, defense and rebounding.
MT, had you heard that story before of when he was asking Phil, he was telling Phil that he needs a break, he's got to go on vacation, and Jordan saying, if anybody needs a damn vacation, I need it. Had you heard that story before, or is that the first time you saw that?
You know, we talked about that story yesterday. How is that any different from load management? Think about it. Guy says, you know what, I need a couple of games off or 3 games off. And so let me go relax someplace. How's that any different from guys now sitting out because they can't play 82 games? So I don't blame Dennis because now it's kind of the norm, isn't it? It's kind of rare when you see a guy play 82 games. Hmm. So guys like Magic, guys like Kobe would never, or Karl Malone, those kind of legends would never ask out of a game just because they want to rest. But today it's commonplace. If a guy isn't hurt, to take a night off.
Well, how about Dennis? It wasn't about resting his body. It was going on a binge for 48 hours in Vegas.
It was to rest his mind, though. Mentally, he wanted to get out. Sure. That's the same as resting your body. He just wanted to get away from basketball mentally. So that's what he did for a couple of days. So it's no different from a guy who wants to rest, even though he's healthy.
So this is I mentioned this yesterday. So Sedano and I did this, you know, quick little post game on ESPN LA yesterday, and I think this was part of the – this is what made Phil Jackson so great. So I'm just going to go back to that predicament that we're talking about where Jordan is saying, like, Phil, if you let him go, we're not going to get him back, especially if you let him go to Vegas. And you see Scotty kind of reminiscing too, thinking in his head, yeah, I remember that. I remember when that happened. Do you agree with me that, you know, one of the things that made Phil Jackson so great is he knew how to push and he knew how to pull and he knew how to kind of lay off when he needed to. There was this like perfect balance of working with every personality was different, right? He didn't treat one player the exact same. He had a different philosophy for each player. He knew the way he's going to motivate Scotty was going to be different than the way he was going to motivate Dennis and the way he was going to motivate Jordan and just kind of go from there. Does when you're watching this yesterday, does that kind of highlight just how unique Phil Jackson was? Is little things like that that he kind of had a pulse for that maybe another coach wouldn't?
Yeah, that's what makes Phil so cool, that he understood player psyche. He was kind of that kind of a quirky kind of guy. So he understood why guys were, you know, personalities were going to be different. Not everybody's going to be a robot or some kind of an android or automaton where they're all going to think and act like. And he understood that everybody's sort of like their own individual, and he's got to treat them as such and know which buttons to push and when not to push. So, yeah, Phil had very keen insight on how to handle different players because of their psychological makeup.
Okay, now take me back. Take me back to Lakers versus the Bulls in the finals, and take me back to kind of when you watched that yesterday, when you watched that documentary, and there, by the way, there's some, as much as it hurt as a Laker fan to see the Lakers lose four straight games, right? I remember when Perkins hit that shot in Chicago, and you know, I just thought in my, I'm like, oh, it's over. Lakers are going to win. They're going to win 4-1. It obviously was the Chicago Bulls. I know you have always said that injuries had so much to do with that series, and I can't argue that. I mean, you're on the court, and we know the value of a guy like James Worthy. I mean, that's everything to that Lakers team. But what was it about that Bulls team as well? Because this was the first time, you know, they tasted a lot of defeat before getting to the finals. Then they got to the finals. Was there also this just hunger from the Chicago Bulls because this was their first chance to get one?
Oh, no question about it, man. They thought they were young, up-and-coming team, and even though they were going against the veteran Lakers, they thought that this was their year. They got past their main obstacle, the Pistons, so they felt that they were on a roll. They came in playing with a lot of confidence. So, you know, it wasn't a shock that they won, just that I don't think they would have won if we were fully healthy. But you never know. They might have found a way to pull it out in 6 or 7. Because they were young and talented and very determined and very confident about their abilities, even against veteran guys like Magic and Worthy who had been there so many times before.
They showed Scotty. Was that game one where he started, or maybe game two where he started picking up Magic full court, and that pretty much Pippen was going to match up against Magic? It, you know, I've mentioned this to you before, but I want to do it again for listeners that, you know, this was – maybe over a month ago we had this conversation. I always thought Scottie Pippen was one of the most underrated players in the NBA because I just thought his value was incredible. And as his career progressed, I mean, you know, it's pretty incredible to watch a player that could play so many different positions. And, of course, Magic had that ability. Bird had that ability. LeBron has that ability. But talk a little bit about what – you just looking back at that series, what Scotty was able to do that was kind of a game changer for the Bulls.
Well, he was the first version of Kawhi Leonard. Could guard any position, and very smart defensive player, great anticipation, and very versatile. So he was just one of those kind of guys who took pride on getting out there and shutting down the toughest player on the floor. He wasn't afraid of the challenge. And that's when he said, I'll take Magic from here on out, especially with Worthy being doubled. And he was able to make it very difficult, even for the great Magic Johnson, to initiate offense because Scotty was so long and athletic and quick.
Okay, so MT, if you don't mind, I'm going to hold you for another segment. I really want to get your thoughts, and I kind of was setting this up. A lot of the conversation today is about Isaiah Thomas, that Detroit Pistons team, the walk-off against the Chicago Bulls, all that stuff. So I want to get your thoughts on that. We'll be right back. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.
This is Alan Sliwa, host of the Lakers pre- and post-game, Lakers Talk and the Sliwa Show. I'm here with Brad Wallace, one of the top personal injury trial lawyers in the game. Brad, tell our listeners why they need to call the Wallace Firm when they get hurt.
Alan, I'll put my courtroom record up against any other lawyer on the radio. We focus on getting our clients top results. You won't see my face on billboards and won't hear me play an annoying jingle. If you get injured, you need a real trial lawyer, not a marketing guy.
Call the Wallace Firm now, 844-844-WINS, or visit wallacewins.com today.
All right, welcome back to Lakers Talk. The great Michael Thompson joining the show right now. MT, first of all, let me just ask you, have you all this time at home, I got to imagine you must be a chef right now. Are you just cooking every day?
Not every day, but I go out sometimes to pick up. But yeah, I've been cooking. You know, I've always been a chef. So I like to cook, make salads, make all kind of potato dishes. So I don't need the social distancing or the quarantine to turn me into a culinary expert. I was already that.
I love the confidence, MT. I love the confidence.
That's right.
Okay, so what? By the way, what's your signature dish? Like, what is a dish that you're walking away with saying, "Yeah, I should open up a restaurant"?
Well, I would say breakfast burritos. I make the best breakfast burritos. I put a little spinach in it, a little bacon, obviously scrambled eggs, a little bell pepper, and I would say, let's see, what else do I throw in there? And, a little cheese. And boy, I tell you, when I wrap that up in a burrito, nothing better.
Sell those like hotcakes right now. Okay, so there's Michael Thompson giving us a little sneak peek into his kitchen. The conversation today, there's been a lot of chatter around Isaiah specifically, right, and the Chicago Bulls. So Bulls beat the Lakers, or Bulls beat the lose to the Pistons 2 years in a row, and you see Michael Jordan giving his congratulations to the Pistons. Pistons eventually win back-to-back championships. In the championship that the Bulls won before they faced the Lakers, they had to get through the Pistons, finally get through that hurdle, and there's that famous, famous scene of the Pistons team walking off without saying congratulations to the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan, Pippen, and everybody else. Do you care about that, or was that made to be way too big of a story, or it's legitimate, it should have been a big story?
It's kind of a little bit of both. I mean, I thought the Pistons were wrong to leave while the game was still going on. I wouldn't have objected if they just walked off after the final buzzer and while the Bulls are celebrating, and you don't have to be out there hugging and kissing the victors. You can just sort of walk off and let them enjoy their victory. We kind of did that. I did that when the Lakers lost in the finals. We walked off after the buzzer and let the Pistons or the Bulls celebrate. I don't remember anybody standing out there hugging and kissing, congratulating the victors. They might have, but I didn't notice it because I had walked into the locker room. And at the time, I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. It's not poor sportsmanship. Just that we lost and we'll go in now. If I saw the guys in the hallway in the back as we were leaving, I would congratulate them. I would say, good job, great win, congratulations. But I'm not going to be happy and stay out there like I'm acting like I'm happy for their success at our expense. But I thought the Pistons were wrong for leaving with, you know, a minute or two on the clock. They should have just waited. And then if they didn't want to shake the Bulls' hands, that's one thing. And if that was me, if I was on the Bulls and they walked off in front of me as the game was winding down, I'd just look at it as just spoiled brats, sore losers. And I'd just leave it at that. I wouldn't carry a grudge over it for 30-something years. I think it was funny. And I'd be happy that we got under their skin that much that they couldn't stand being around any longer. That's where I would get the satisfaction from. But I wouldn't feel like, boy, they've got to stay here and congratulate me and acknowledge my victory. So I wouldn't care. I'd be too happy that we won, be worrying about that.
Well, listen, you know how they sometimes say, just let your game do the talking? If there's ever an example of your game doing the talking, I mean, the Bulls dominated the Pistons. And by the way, that's kind of the one thing I pulled away. I got a chance to hear Bill Laimbeer with Rachel Nichols. You got a chance to hear Isaiah Thomas this morning. He was on Get Up. I think he was on First Take as well. And just kind of giving his side of the story, his version. This is the only thing I'll say. MT, if you go back and you look at some of these championships, I could remember LeBron James. I don't know if it was in the finals, might have been the Eastern Conference Finals against the Celtics, maybe even the same thing against the Orlando Magic. A lot of times, when you're in the heat of the moment, okay, you know what? You don't want to go give your congratulations to another team. Is it that big of a deal? I mean, here you are playing competition. You're at the absolute biggest stage. And in that moment, if you don't want to go congratulate somebody, I feel like the way they have sacrificed the Detroit Pistons and made them as if they were you know, that they made the biggest crime. It happens in sports. It happens every year. Why the Pistons? Why did they make such a big deal about the Pistons where 30 years later this is still a conversation?
Well, they were such a high-profile team going against the best player in the game. And Michael Jordan was the face of the NBA, and the Pistons were, you know, defending champions. So that had a lot of attention on it, not even close to what it would be like now with all the social media and 24-hour coverage on talk radio and everything like that. But because it was in the Eastern Conference Finals, if it was the first round, probably nobody even complained about it. But since it was the Eastern Conference Finals and against the great Michael Jordan and the Bulls, that garnered a lot more attention. But for me, like I said, I would have just laughed at it, considered them spoiled brats, you know, sore losers, and I would move on. I wouldn't hold a grudge or think that, boy, they didn't give me my proper recognition. That's just not me. I'd be too like I said, I would be too happy that we won and we're going on to the NBA Finals to be worrying about that kind of petty stuff.
Well, listen, I'll go back. I do, like, I loved how Jordan handled himself when they lost to the Pistons 2 years in a row. I loved how Magic, you know, that iconic picture. I'd never seen that picture before. Jordan, you know, hugging Magic after he wins his first championship and very emotional. And you know, like, I think those are beautiful moments because here is a player that was being labeled as somebody that, yes, can score. He unbelievable highlights, but can he win the big one? He finally wins the big one. But even if he doesn't get that congratulations from the Pistons, I think you put it best, MT. Your game did the talking, you know. So I don't even think Jordan or some of these guys should care about that. Do you think Isaiah, this was another conversation that came up, Isaiah doesn't make the, you know, the dream team. Do you think a lot of him not making the dream team had nothing to do with basketball and it was all about more of the politicking of it and how people just frankly didn't like him?
Well, it sure seems that way, because he definitely should have been one of the 12 guys on that team on his status in the league at the time. He was next to Magic, the best point guard in the game. Obviously, John Stockton was there too. But Isaiah Thomas was known to be one of the top four guards in basketball. For him not to be on that team was an injustice. He should have been there. So maybe some of that stuff had something to do with it, that he wasn't popular with some of his peers. So I got to believe that's what the reason was, because there was no other reason why he should not have been on the original, on the 92 Olympic team.
Yeah, that one, you know, sometimes it's moments like this, situations like this. Heck, we'd have already swept Memphis at this point if the playoffs were going on. But because it's not happening, we're sitting in this position where we're bringing up old stuff and we're talking about, you know, this documentary. But those are a couple things that stick out, MT. And I'll tell you what, just that those storylines in itself I thought was fascinating. MT, what'd you think about the NBA trying to open up some of these facilities? Do you feel like if certain states have the ability to open up facilities but other states are going under different guidelines, do you feel like it should be a kind of, hey, let's do it all together at once, so there's not one team that gets players in a facility that another organization just happens to be in a different state doesn't get the players in the facility?
No, it's okay to do it piece by piece, depending on how the virus is being contracted in certain areas. If it's under control, there are certain phases. Some areas will be able to start opening up society in some capacity, small ways. So depending on what the circumstances are around your area, I say open up where you can, when you can, no matter where it is.
All right, MT. Listen, man, I appreciate it. I know listeners always love getting your opinion on things. So thank you for taking some time and joining the show. All right, bud?
Okay, guys, you bet.
All right, that's Michael Thompson right there. The best. Look forward to those games, or look forward to when we get back to games and him and I can start doing the pregame show together once again. So see when that happens. Okay, I got to now give my thoughts and my opinion on this stuff and, you know, getting a chance to watch The Last Dance yesterday. What a fantastic documentary. This is what I was surprised of. MT was just hitting on this Isaiah Thomas stuff. I don't know why Isaiah Thomas was so apologetic. I'm going to play what Isaiah Thomas said earlier today. So he was on Get Up and he was on First Take. And then I'll play a little bit of what Bill Laimbeer said. I'm kind of with Laimbeer on this one. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, great stuff as always from Michael Thompson. So I don't know what you guys thought of yesterday. You're watching The Last Dance. I mean, I'm assuming that the documentaries have been so good, and I think sports fans in general just are so hungry just to get some type of sports and the conversation. By the way, even if we were in the thick of the playoffs, which I'm not saying the Jordan documentary would have been front and center. There's a reason why they had it planned for July. They would kind of have only be competing with baseball and the summer league and things along those lines. They wouldn't be competing with the NBA playoffs. But it's just so well done. And it's such a fascinating story. It's one thing. This is what I give ESPN a ton of credit for. First of all, I'm a documentaries guy. So if you have an interesting documentary, and it could be about anything, you know, I think that's always where the best journalism is done. So they can do 30 for 30s that are fascinating. And I don't need to know all the details of a player or a team or a coach to get reeled in. This is a combination of the biggest sports athletes in the history of sports. Obviously, I'm talking about Michael Jordan. I'm talking about Phil Jackson, how big you know, he is, the greatest coach of all time. Then you got guys like Pippen and Rodman. You have a team that was already so fascinating, a team that was already arguably the best team or one of the best teams of all time. You have that part of it, and that's already in the bank. That's enough to hook us all. But then on top of that, now you're doing this documentary, and it's footage that we've never seen before. Stories that we've never heard of. So that's what makes this so captivating. So for the, you know, the team that's all involved in putting this thing together and footage from 20 plus years ago, it is, it really, really is. It is so, so good. I mean, yesterday I remember watching and there were a couple moments. I want to get to the Isaiah Thomas stuff, but I'll get to it in a second. Some of the Laker ties, right? Watching Jordan and the Bulls for the first time get past the Pistons, and then here now you got Magic Johnson and you got the Los Angeles Lakers. And I'm, you know, I'll say it, and I know MT always says it, Lakers were beat up. James Worthy wasn't healthy. That wasn't a full representation of the Lakers, but you know, that's also part of what just happens in sports. You know, the timing of it could be bad. One team is just obsessed to try and get their first championship. At that point, Magic and Bird, or Magic and Worthy, had multiple championships. So the circumstances were different. But just even watching that part of it yesterday and seeing Sam Perkins hit that three in game one of the finals. I remember that. I was mentioning it in Crosstalk. Yeah, I don't know how old I was. 8 years old, maybe, something along those lines. But I remember Perkins hitting that shot and me telling my uncle, being like, it's over, guys. I mean, I don't even know why we're going to play the rest of the games. Lakers got it. They already won. They got one on the road. It's 1-0. Bulls will win game 2, 1-1. Lakers will go back to L.A. They'll sweep all three games. The exact opposite happens. And, you know, the Chicago Bulls get their first championship. But that moment that I thought was so cool yesterday, seeing Jordan embrace Magic, and there was this, you know, incredible respect. I mean, here's Magic Johnson. He had 5 chips at the time. You know, his resume, it can't get any stronger. That's Magic Johnson at that time. Think of Magic at that time, right? You can't be a bigger athlete. And Jordan trying to do everything he can to just try to be in the conversation with Magic and Bird. And in order for him to do that, and in order for him to kind of get that monkey off his back, he had to get that first one. This happens a lot. Shaq was trying everything he can to get that first one. And once he got that first one, they started rolling. Lakers win 3 in a row. And that was, you know, Michael Jordan, that first time, that belief, like, damn, I can do this. Damn, I did do this. And then they end up winning 3 championships in a row. But just that embracing, yesterday was one of the episodes where we see a lot of Los Angeles Lakers. You know, we're not going to see that in probably some of these other episodes, but that was the first chip that they were showing and they were highlighting as they go back and forth. back and forth to players, back and forth to the Bulls with Jerry Krause and trying to figure out roster moves. But that was that part of it I thought was fantastic. So this is what I want to go to real quick, what I was getting at. So Isaiah Thomas, they're making such a big deal about this. I'm not telling you that what the Pistons did back in those days, walking off the way they did, I'm not saying that's the blueprint of sportsmanship. I'm not saying they should have done it. But damn, I mean, you haven't seen athletes or players walk off after they lose? I feel like I see it all the time. I think it's just as rare to see players hang around and give their props and give their love. Maybe not just as rare. I know it happens. But I don't think it's that uncommon for players to say in the heat of a moment, you lose game seven, or you lose, you know, you get destroyed by a team and you just are in absolute disgust with your team. In competition, it's very common for players to just walk off. That doesn't mean they don't have respect for the team that beat them. That doesn't mean they won't eventually see them in the locker room and say, hey, you know, you deserve this. That doesn't mean that they'll never congratulate that team again. But the amount of attention that goes back to the Pistons walking off, I mean, let's not forget that that was the Bad Boy Pistons, right? Like, that was their name. The way they won championships was not by being your best friend. The way the Pistons won championships was literally out-muscling, beating up other teams. You come into the paint, you saw what they were doing to Michael Jordan, which is why Jordan said, okay, we're going into the locker room. I'm gaining 15 pounds. He was gaining like 5 pounds a week or something like that till he got to 215, whatever he was doing, right? Or however long it got him to go from 200 to 215. The Bulls kind of made their adjustments. They went through all the losses. Really, I mean, at the end of the day, the true – whether another team gives you a congratulations or a warm felt hug or not, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant because the fact that the Pistons were walking off the court, being swept by the Chicago Bulls, that said it all right there. You accomplished what you were supposed to accomplish. I'm okay with all that. But if Isaiah Thomas not making the dream team is because of the way they walked off, that part's not right. And I got a chance, you know, was listening to Get Up and First Take this morning, and especially First Take, where they were talking about how you look at the players around the NBA at that time, and there's that list is stacked. Isaiah Thomas is supposed to be on that dream team. Real quick, I want to play what Isaiah Thomas said on Get Up. This is on not being on the dream team because, again, he keeps justifying this lapse of emotion. Here's Isaiah Thomas.
I tried to do everything correctly, and I thought I should have made that dream team. However, I wasn't a part of it. That hurt me. And looking back, if I'm not a part of the dream team because, you know, a lapse in emotion in terms of not shaking someone's hand, if that's the reason why I didn't make the dream team, then I am more disappointed today than I was back then when I wasn't selected.
He should be. By the way, I'm sorry. That's pettiness if that's the case. I mean, even Jordan. When Bulls lost to the Pistons those 2 years and the way Jordan stood on the court, I mean, I can't tell you how much respect I had for Jordan standing there, losing to the Detroit Pistons 2 years in a row, losing in game seven against the Detroit Pistons, and he stood there and he still gave them love. Okay, that's okay. That's Michael Jordan. If these other players don't show that same respect, I could see how you're bitter about it. I could see that you're upset about it. But Isaiah Thomas losing his opportunity to make a dream team because of that. By the way, I don't want Isaiah to even, I don't even want him to go back and say it was a lapse of judgment. It is what it is. It happened in the moment. I don't think he has to apologize all the time. I think, you know, he knows that at that moment, probably not the best thing to do, but it happened. And I'm sure part of that was probably driven by the Bill Laimbeers of the world. Here's Bill Laimbeer on the jump. Laimbeer, let's just say, he's not one to apologize on not shaking the hands of the Chicago Bulls players in the 91 playoffs.
The documentary details how you in particular were the one who told your teammates at the end of that series, "We're not shaking their hands. We're just leaving." What do you remember from that?
Well, just that. You know, they whined and cried for a year and a half about how bad we were for the game. But more importantly, they said we're bad people. We weren't bad people. We were just basketball players winning. And that kind of stuck with me because they didn't know who we were or what we were about as individuals in our family life. So all that whining they did, why shake their hand? They were just whiners. They won the series. Give them credit. We got old. They got past us, but okay, move on.
Do you regret now not shaking their hand? Do you stand by that?
No. Why would I regret now today? I don't care what the media says about them. I never did. If I did, I'd be a basket case, especially back then. I was about winning basketball games and winning championships and did whatever I had to do to get the most out of my ability and our team. And we did. At the end of the day, we're called world champions.
Kind of like Lambeer's fans out there. I kind of like Lambeer doubling down. By the way, here's the reality. I do appreciate when the Lakers win a championship and those players stay on to say congratulations. You respect that. Of course you do. When there were Laker players who have lost in the past, and I don't remember off the top of my head. Like, I don't remember when the Lakers lost to the Spurs in 2003. I don't remember if the Lakers gave love. I don't remember if the Laker players gave love to the Pistons when they lost in the finals. Just off the top of my head, I don't remember. If they did, awesome. If they didn't, I don't care. You know, if when the Lakers lost in 2008 to the Boston Celtics, I have no idea off the top of my head if Kobe and the rest of the gang stayed behind to give their love. They probably didn't. You saw Paul Pierce pour that Gatorade 2 minutes left in the game, whatever, on Doc Rivers, whatever it was. But I have no idea if it happened. But the fact that this just continues to be a story this many years later, and I'll say this again, if that had an effect on Isaiah Thomas making the Dream Team, that's not right. And that's on Michael Jordan. If Jordan was the one to kind of lead the charge and say, no, I don't want to put him on this team, I don't feel like that's right. Because there are many players in the heat of the moment when you're in the competition that if you don't want to go say your congratulations after you take an L, I get it. I've seen it before. We've seen it in sports. We'll see it again. That shouldn't be too much of a shock or a surprise. Okay. How about the way Phil Jackson coached Dennis Rodman? Man, I can't tell you how much anytime there's footage on Phil and they spend time on a champion that won five champions with the Los Angeles Lakers and did it with two different regimes. I can't tell you how much I love that. Let's talk some Phil Jackson when we come back. If you guys want to be a part of Lakers Talk, any topic you want to hit on, 877-710-ESPN. We'll continue to talk about this last dance, and we'll kind of incorporate the Phil Jackson portion of it coming up next. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN.